Had the choice been mine, I would have put Shaddam Carino to death and Count Hasimir Fenring along with him. However, I will honor my brother's decision, though it may bring me misery later. Aaliyah Atreides, comment reported by Duncan Idaho. Accompanying the somber procession after Bronzo's execution, Princess Irulan walked beside Jessica along a wide swath that the guards had cleared through the crowds so they could make their way over to the death still. Neither she nor Jessica spoke. Despite her initial resistance, Irulan had come to realize that the entire scheme was one that Paul would have devised. He would have set up his own nemesis in order to dismantle the massive power structure of his own legend by whatever means possible. And Bronzo had taken the secret with him into the death still. Aaliyah and Duncan, the Imperial Regent and her Gola consort, ascended the steps to the dais where the death still sat in the sunlight. Reclaimed moisture condensed on its transparent side panels and circulated through internal vents. Droplets of humanity, Irulan thought. The Kizaret had announced a day of rejoicing, a ghoulish celebration, and Aaliyah seemed quite pleased about it. The thunderous cheers grew louder as Aaliyah, Duncan, Gurney, Jessica, and Irulan stepped up to observe what the government had done, the justice that had been served. Irulan tried to recall her former anger over all the things Bronzo had written, the lies he had told, the bold exaggerations he had concocted. She was not sure if she would have been willing to die. At least, not that way, to protect her version of the truth. A group of priests formed a ring around them on the platform, surrounding the death still. The regent spoke in a loud, resonant voice that carried far beyond the dais. Princess Irulan, wife of Muad'Dib, you are now free to correct the historical record, to refute the absurd claims of Bronzo of Ix, and to strengthen my brother's legacy for all time. Irulan formed her answer with great care. I will do what is right, Regent Aaliyah. Jessica glanced at the princess, but the answer seemed to satisfy Aaliyah, as well as the crowd, judging by the exuberant response. Though obviously disturbed, Jessica stepped forward so that she reached the death still before Aaliyah. She raised her voice to the throng. Priests, bring us goblets. This is the water of Bronzo of Ix, and all of us know what he has done. After a flurry of confusion, two Kizaras rushed forward bearing five ornate goblets. Irulan watched Jessica, struggling to understand what she was doing. Gurney Halleck held his tongue, though he seemed deeply concerned. Aaliyah, however, was delighted by her mother's suggestion. Ah, just as Count Fenring drank of his evil daughter's water after I killed her, so now we do the same to Bronzo. The priests formally distributed the goblets, and Irulan accepted hers. Despite the day's heat and the pressing crowds, the metal felt surprisingly cold in her grip. From the death still's reservoir, Jessica decanted water into her cup and waited while Duncan did the same for himself and Aaliyah. With pointed movements, Jessica also filled the goblets held by Gurney and Irulan. When the princess hesitated, Jessica said clearly, "It is water, Irulan. Nothing more." "The water of the vanquished traitor." Aaliyah lifted her goblet. "As the enemy of Muad'Dib vanishes, his water rejuvenates us and gives us strength." She took a long sip. "Bronzo of Ix," Jessica said, then drank. Irulan shuddered, suddenly understanding Jessica's motives. To her, it was not a condemnation, but a toast. A salute to acknowledge his brave, selfless actions and the terrible sacrifice he had made for Paul and for the legacy of humankind. In a way, it was a counterpoint to the harsh but necessary thing that Jessica had done to the 10 foolish rebels on Caladan so many years ago. But this was not a goblet of poison, merely water. Irulan drove back her uncomfortable feelings. It is water. The liquid was warm and tasteless, distilled, filtered, pure, and not at all satisfying. But she drank it to honor Bronzo, as Jessica had intended. Afterward, Aaliyah commanded that the rest of the traitor's water be distributed among the highest-ranking members of the priesthood, as a sort of communion. As the crowds began to disperse following the execution spectacle, a commotion erupted in the streets. With great fanfare, a troop of acrobats began bounding and pirouetting, using suspensor belts to fly high in the air and perform tricks. People laughed and applauded, their good humor hard-edged and barely slaked by the blood of the man they had just seen put to death. "Jongleurs!" someone called. Jessica watched them come, saw them use the crowd as a springboard. Agile acrobats, seemingly made of inelastic substance, pranced and danced and flew, moving closer to the dais, performing for the crowd as well as for the royal spectators. At the front strutted an elegant man in an amazingly white outfit. He stood tall, raised one hand, and shouted, "I am Rainvar the Magnificent, and we have come to perform for you in honor of Paul Muad'Dib." With a gracious gesture, he extended both hands toward the platform. "And of course, to honor the Regent Aaliyah, the Princess Irulan, and the lovely Lady Jessica." In the midst of polite applause, Jessica recalled something Bronzo had said when telling his tale about Rainvar. "Many things have changed. Only appearances remain the same." The dignitaries remained to watch as the jonglers completed their show. Then Aaliyah directed her priests to pay them handsomely. "You cannot hide forever from grief. It will find you in the wind, in your dreams, in the smallest of things. It will find you." The Gola's Lament. The festivities after the execution of Bronzo left Jessica's heart heavier still. Knowing that Aaliyah expected her to be there, smiling and pleased with their victory, Jessica put in an appearance, a brief one, for as long as she could stand. But as the hedonistic celebrations in the sprawling citadel grew louder and more raucous all around her, she could no longer bear the tension and the grim disgust she felt within her soul. How could everyone be merry when something inside her felt so obviously wrong? She needed to be alone. The Bene Gesserits had hammered their training into her to exert control over what they believed to be personal weakness, human weakness. They considered themselves such experts on humanity. But their attempts to control it, from prohibiting love to breeding for a Kwisatz Haderach, invariably fell flat. Human beings could never be controlled completely. If they could see her now, the sisters would likely have approved of Jessica's remarkable success at disciplining her emotions since she'd learned of Paul's death. But her very remoteness from her own feelings left her with a sense that she was incomplete, like a eunuch rendered incapable of a basic biological function. Jessica had shielded herself for so long from any outpouring of emotions that she had successfully crushed that spark into a cold, gray ash. And to what purpose? On that night long ago, lost in the desert, when she and Paul learned of Duke Leto's death, she had wept. and she'd been greatly disturbed by Paul's inability to show his feelings. Later, during the Battle of Arrakeen, she had been upset with Paul's stony reaction upon hearing that Sardaukar had killed his firstborn son. Paul, the brave and victorious commander whose Fremen armies had overthrown an empire, was unable to weep for that martyred infant. Now Jessica had become the same type of person, unable to grieve, even for her lost son. Now, in the Citadel, fleeing the maddening parties and the commotion, she followed an unconscious need that drew her through doorways and down corridors. To her surprise, she found herself at the entrance to the creche. Something clarified in her mind. "My grandchildren," she thought, "young Leto and Ganema, the future of Arrakis and of House Atreides." She felt a powerful urge to see them, to look into their eyes and search for any hint of those she had lost. Paul, Chaney, even her beloved Duke Leto. By now, the uniformed guards at the conservatory doorway let Jessica pass without challenge. She strode through one door seal and then another into the lush greenhouse that had been converted into a nursery. Hera was there, dutiful and loyal, like a lioness defending her cubs. She had wanted nothing to do with Bronzo's execution or the celebrations afterward. "Hera, I would like to be alone with my grandchildren for a while. Please indulge me." Stilgar's wife bowed, always formal around Jessica despite their years of familiarity. "Of course, Sayadina." The other woman slipped away, leaving Jessica to stare down at the boy and girl, only months old. These two already carried a great potential, as well as a strangeness within them. Jessica knew that Aaliyah had wrestled with other memories and unusual thoughts all her life. What else might these poor babies have to endure? Although she had been reticent around the twins on previous visits, had only been to see them a few times, Jessica did not hesitate. She lifted one baby into the crook of each arm. "Dear Leto, sweet Ganema." She leaned over and kissed each child on the forehead, and as she did so, she realized it was a rebellion against how she had been raised, never allowed to feel any affection, never allowed to learn it.